Hello, Johnson County. Welcome to this episode of the Texas Transparency Project, where we pull back the curtain on government and local politics that impact our lives. I'm your host, Greg Cooper, and today we're joined by none other than soon-to-be sworn-in Texas House District 58 Representative Helen Kerwin. Helen Kerwin made waves this year by defeating 10-year incumbent Dwayne Burns and Republican challenger accomplished attorney Lyndon Laird in the spring 2024 primary and runoff for the Republican nomination to Texas legislature. Then she sealed the deal in November, beating Libertarian newcomer Richard Windman by nearly 46,000 votes. Today, we'll talk to Helen about three key topics: what she's been doing since her primary win in May and subsequently after the November general election, her goals as the new District 58 representative, and what she sees as the biggest challenges of the looming 89th legislative session. But before we dive in, let's take a quick break. Welcome back. For those new to the show, this is Texas Transparency Project, where we shine a light on issues that matter most to Johnson County residents, and I'm your host, Greg Cooper. We focus on four core areas: state and federal politics, when they impact us locally, local politics, the Johnson County city councils and the commissioner's court, school districts, the local elected school boards, local ISD policies, and the financial health of Johnson County ISDs. And lastly, property taxes, specifically local budgets, tax rates, and bonds funded by ad valorem property taxes. We applaud good stewardship of taxpayer dollars and hold accountable those who waste them. But today we have the privilege of hosting Helen Kerwin, who I'm officially dubbing Hurricane Helen because she's a force to be reckoned with. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. I'm so happy to be here.
So, Helen, you've been a whirlwind of activity since May, hence the hurricane nickname. How do you keep your incredible pace out there campaigning and learning, getting ready for the 89th legislative session?
Well, I learned early on, and actually about a year ago last week, I started campaigning, and how I loved to deal with the people and talk to them, get out into the district, learn all of the local issues. And it's so inspiring. I love to take on any issues they have and just talk to them and spend time in the community. And actually, since the general on November 5th, I haven't stopped campaigning. I'm still out there doing the same thing.
I don't think there's any question that you've been absolutely very, very visible and very involved with the community. And I mean, it feels like the primary was forever ago. What are the biggest ways that you're learning about the district and learning about the needs of the citizens and going back and forth? And tell us about some of the trips down to Austin, trying to learn and get ready for the session.
Well, I started doing the Austin trips, you know, after the general, and I've been going down there about once a week, learning the ropes, which I figured I have to do because we're sworn in on the 14th, and we take our desks, and we don't get done until June. So I really don't have any time to learn the ropes and introduce myself, talk to other representatives, what the issues are in Austin. And it's been fascinating because I have learned that it's almost a completely different job as far as being a House representative, because I've spent the last year campaigning in the district, addressing local issues, and I go to Austin, and we are looking at a lot of votes, the majority of the votes dealing with state issues. In this upcoming session, probably the most important is going to be water, and of course, property taxes, school choice, big, big issues. So there's just, and I come back here and I go to city councils, chamber of commerce, of course, the commissioner's court, and then I try to go to any meeting I can just to talk to the variety of groups and citizens in the district. last, I think it was like 2 days last week, and the first half of the day was with the extension agents and AgriLife ladies from Somerville and Johnson counties. And then that afternoon, I met with the Johnson County Texas Farm Bureau guys. Awesome day. And then the next day, I went over to Tarleton and spent half the day with Dr. Hurley at Tarleton, learning about the higher education issues. And then came back and talked to Somerville County group of librarians. So it's that's what I love doing, is keeping contact with the locals.
And that's all in 1 week. Hence why we dubbed her the name Hurricane Helen, because that's well, pretty much the pace that she's been on since she won the primary, which is awesome. So and with the holidays coming up, what's on the agenda for the how does the Kerwin family celebrate the holiday season?
Well, we go to our little farm in Glen Rose, and we're all nature lovers, so we're pretty much hang out with the horses, and we do a lot of hiking. We have a very, very competitive Secret Santa contest, and do a lot of cooking and baking like most families.
That's awesome to hear. And, you know, as we all count our blessings this time of year at the holiday season, speaking of blessings, what do you think of the new studio? You've joined us for two other shows during the primary and the runoff. What do you think of the new studio?
Okay, this is so awesome. And thanks to Apos. I mean, how wonderful. Fernando, such an asset to Johnson County. All of the things I see him at and supporting and donating. This is wonderful. And how great to get your transparency issue out to Johnson County. This is just, it's amazing. It's so well done and warm and friendly. And I look forward to doing a lot more shows here.
Well, we can't wait. And we look forward to We're looking to coin the name Update for District 58, Legislative Update for District 58. So we'll talk more about that. But speaking of the blessings we've received, you know, we couldn't have done this without Apos Ranch and Outdoors. They're located at 1501 North Main Street here in Cleburne. They have holiday hours if you're looking for any last-minute gifts between now and Christmas. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They also, as Ms. Kerwin said, they do a lot of great community outreach, and they're sponsoring the 12th annual Christmas feast this year. That's being hosted by the Bread Connection, and that will be for the first time at the Cleburne Conference Center from 11 to 4. And if you want to volunteer, you can reach out to Michelle Morales or donate. Michelle Morales at 817-933-8168. Once again, that's 817-933-8168. Santa will be in attendance for the littles, and gifts will be passed out to the children. So now back to our guest, a newly elected Texas House District 58 Representative Helen Kerwin. And we're going to talk about some of her priorities and goals. And Helen, before we get into that, let's talk about when you will be sworn in. You said January 14th. Is this an event open to the public? Where does this happen at?
It is. I'm putting a Bread Connection date in my phone. What date is that?
Oh, for the 12th annual Christmas feast. That is on Christmas Day, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
We will come over. That's a great way to
spend. Me and my family are volunteering.
Day.
Yeah, we Thank don't have you. Family, so my children and my wife and I are going to volunteer. Yeah. I think they want volunteers if they can get there at 9:30. But Michelle Morales, once again, at 817-933-8168. She can square you away on that, and I'll give you that information after
Michelle.
The show.
Okay.
But awesome. But yeah, it's a pretty good event. He's started in a I think one of the stores, and it's expanded every year. And they're allowing it to be done at Cleburne Conference Center. This year, the police are involved, fires involved. It's a pretty cool event.
That's
Fernando's
so
generous to the community.
Oh,
Cleburne's blessed to have him for sure.
A rock star.
So, anyways, so you're being sworn in. How does that look in January 14th? Is that open to the public?
That is open to the public, January 14th at noon at the Capitol. But it's a first come, first serve in the gallery. And we'll be sworn in, and then we will elect the speaker. the new Speaker of the House, and then I haven't gotten a full agenda, but later in the day, or maybe immediately after, I'm not sure because I'm freshman, but we will be discussing any rules that we want to vote on and change for this upcoming 89th session.
So your three big campaign promises were securing the Texas border, eliminate property taxes, and empowering parents. But, you know, we're going to talk about the speakership and what's going on with that before we get to it.
Okay.
This is a pretty contentious thing. Dave Phelan, he stepped down. You're supporting David Cook, House District 96 out of Mansfield.
Yeah.
But a last-minute mulligan, Dustin Burroughs, has swooped in since then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say that during the primary, this was one of the hottest topics discussed. Why is who the House of Representatives chooses as Speaker a very important issue? I understand that there's some that they choose the parliamentarian, the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to the voters and the citizens of District 58 why this is a big deal.
Well, the Speaker and the parliamentarian, of course, are the two most powerful people. There's 150 of us. And the Speaker has an agenda of moving the bills. The parliamentarian actually can trump that too. It is what I campaigned on more than anything as I got into my campaign, because I had so many citizens say, why is our conservative legislation not getting through? Why are our bills killed? I did a little research and I discovered that we do have rhinos in a lot of them. Even though we are 88 Republicans in our House of 150, and we are the majority, there is a makeup of a group with rhinos. And that is, unfortunately, what I see we really need to work hard to prevent from this next session. I think this is very historic, even though it may be contentious. I think we have an opportunity to bring our conservative agenda back to the House. With David Cook, he has pledged no Democrat chairs will be appointed. Dustin Burroughs has not pledged that. And we did, the two main things that I campaigned on and most of the grassroots campaigned on were not to allow Dade Phelan for another speakership and not to allow Democratic chairs to be appointed. Well, check on the first one that happened the day before our caucus. And then going into caucus, we thought that it would be a unified caucus. Well, little did we know that first round of voting, we had 48 for David Cook, candidate from Mansfield, and then Dustin Burroughs came out of nowhere. And we did another round, and it was very close. And then the campaign, the Dustin Burroughs, 26 of them, actually got up and walked out, breaking the caucus rules. So the third vote with quorum elected David Cook. So he has been elected as our speaker nominee with the quorum by the majority. So we are supporting him and with a conservative agenda and with a pledge from him. Again, no Democrat chairs. Dustin Burroughs is announced that same day that he has enough votes to become speaker, that he has, what verb should I use? He has talked to and gotten commitments from rhinos and also some Democrats. So I think that it's important that constituents know from those 26 districts that we are looking at Democrat chairs being appointed again, and a rhino agenda, often having more bills come out rather than our conservative agenda. And the reason for this is, in the general election, we had an overwhelming majority of our state vote for conservative legislation. And I think we have to honor that. And I think that the Burroughs people are probably not looking at that in the larger picture. But in my interpretation, I think that they are wanting to continue the speakership agenda of Dade Phelan.
I think it's fair to say that. And you talk about the committees. Every piece of legislation goes into committee. They get redlined. They get added to. Stuff gets deleted. Yeah. This is a big deal. But things can get held up in committee by who's are appointed to the committee chairs. And what has happened in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the speaker to get elected, Dade Phelan, he sided with Democrats with a small amount of Republicans, with a large amount of Democrats, and then he appointed Democrat chairs of certain committees, which gave the Democrats and a much more liberal management of those committees, which can halt conservative legislation. And is that why this committee the committee appointments is such a big deal, Ms. Kerwin?
Yes. Yes. So much power in committees, and like the eliminated property tax just never made it out of committee. And it's very, very powerful. It's so important to have conservative chairmen with a conservative Republican majority in our house, in our state. And it's just, I think that, and David Cook has pledged, and I've gotten to know him the last month since I've been down there. He came to orientation and talked to us. I believe he honors his pledges, and I believe that he will not let us down in his very conservative perspective on things.
I hope so. And like I said, this was one of the most emotional things during the primary, as that was going on.
Well, the 9 bills that were killed on the floor.
Sure.
7 of them were amazing bills. The security, military force on the border. That Governor Abbott would have control of, not President Biden. I mean, that was in Shelby Park, was happening during all this. That was killed. CRT was killed. China Buying Farmlands was killed. There were so many good bills that I hope they will be addressed quickly in the 89th session.
Well, hopefully this will get sorted out. And Johnson County Republican Party, they did a resolution on your request. The Johnson County Republican Party did a resolution supporting David Cook, and this is a plank in the Republican Party of Texas. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal across conservatism.
It's the caucus rules that whoever has voted with a majority and a quorum in caucus, they will support. And that's one of the rules that was broken with Dustin Burroughs. So the resolution, we thought it was so important, and that's why I asked the Johnson County Republican Party to draw up a resolution in support of the caucus rules. I think it's so important that we support our caucus. And they did. They did a great job, got it done in 3 days, and we are putting it out there into the other districts, because there is something I've really learned down there, that so many constituents are not aware of what goes in and what goes on to the House of Representatives. I didn't. I know a year ago, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have known about this speaker division and the Republican Party dividing. So we think it's really important that the constituents in the district and all of Texas, there are Republican clubs and county chairs that are signing other resolutions to bring attention to the voters that this can happen, whereby you are being compromised. Your vote in particular is being compromised right now by them breaking caucus and trying to work with the Democrats.
Well, it's good to see that that's moving forward. And I guess we'll know early January. And so we'll all keep the foot on the gas
on
that.
January 14th, tune in.
Yeah. And so another thing before we get into your three big priorities here, you have proposed or filed your first bill, House Bill 1674. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about 1674? And for those that remember, this came up in the issues of the primaries and kind of late in the primaries. But you familiarize yourself with this issue. Tell us what 1674 is and how that came to fruition.
Well, it was way back in February, And I was trying to go to the city council meetings, chamber of commerce meetings, trying to learn Johnson County, because I'm from Somerville County, as everyone knows. And I was sitting in the back of the commissioner's court, and a lady got up and rolled in this table on wheels with four different vases of fresh flowers, which started with white and went to beige and went to tan and went to brown. And I thought, what is going on? Long story short, Dana Ames, who is the Johnson County investigator in detective environmental causes, gave a presentation on a situation around the Grandview area about a farmer, well, actually, it was a rancher's grazelands, but adjoining farmlands. They're both impacted, the farmers and the ranches, where, like this bill, it's so prevalent in Texas, and presented the case for Forever Chemicals, and they are actually being found in the fertilizer that has been brought down from the Fort Worth biowaste plant. These are Forever Chemicals because they're man-made. They're not, they don't occur in nature. And they are now, with studies, being linked to cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, ADHD, all kinds of ailments. And they never go away. They're indestructible. And they're being put on our soils. So I was shocked. And these vases of what started as white flowers showed that how in the soil our plants and our grasses and our crops are taking these forever chemicals up. From the time she put the white carnations in that have only been in less than a day, to maybe the dark brown ones that had been in the water for a while soaking up these forever chemicals. I was shocked, and I immediately called her the next day, and I said, Dana, if I get elected, I'm going to take this on, and I'm going to give a priority. I think it's that Texans are so unsuspecting that these chemicals are going down the drain, not being tested for, indestructible. And the tests they are using with her research are so outdated. They're testing for heavy metals. They're testing for Salmonella and E. coli. Well, these new, very, very sophisticated chemicals, there's nothing out there that Texas is requiring. So I started on that right away when I won the general in November. Went down to Austin, and Texas Public Policy helped me write the bill. Dana's research has been 3 years, maybe plus. Commissioner Woolley with Precinct 4 and Constable Fuller with Precinct 4, they've been a team. I don't get credit for this bill. They get credit for this bill. But Dana's research has been incredible. We have talked to Pennsylvania, Michigan are doing the same thing. Maine has banned any forever chemicals, completely banned the entire state. So we've gotten a lot of research done, very credible. The lab studies are very credible. And the bill got done last week, and I walked it over to the House of Representatives. They sent it to Texas Ledge, and it is 1674. The first step, the door is open now. I am hoping that it will be accepted as a nonpartisan bill. It affects everyone. It affects our livestock, it affects our crops, it affects everyone. So I'm hoping that we will be able to get this through the House and through the Senate, and it will become a law. It's a long journey. There's a lot of doors to open in the legislature in Austin, but it's a good bill, and I really have high hopes for it. And Dana, thank you. Credit goes to her.
And here in Johnson County, I think that we know this as PFOS or PFOS. Uh-huh. This was a big deal towards the end of the primary. It was coming out. I think it really shined a light on the investigation she was doing. One of Precinct 4 is one of the only precincts that to have an environmental crimes section, from what I understand. Uh-huh. And hopefully this will open the door for some more money and some more mm-hmm. divisions down the road.
And we're already getting coverage. We're already getting coverage on it. So I think it hopefully will. The bill is for the state right now. And to give it teeth, what we did is we went ahead and wrote penalties. So Class A misdemeanor, $4,000 fine. Repeat offenders, it could be upgraded to a felony, $10,000 fine. So hopefully that will give it some teeth. We have actually listed 27 of these forever chemicals that have to be tested. Now, there's hundreds out there, but these are the 27 that have the studies that links them to all these diseases.
Well, and hopefully the bill can evolve as new chemicals are identified. And this is just a true testament to you keeping your foot on the gas, to the work that Precinct 4 has done. So props to them. So really? Congratulations on your first bill.
Well, thank you. And here's another exciting thing, because we had all these Zoom calls with chemists and with Dana and Larry and Troy and trying to get everything out there. And one of the issues was you're going to have a corporate ag universe come after you. And all about the expenses and the budgets and everything. And so guess what we found out? The testing for these 27 chemicals is $750. So that is not going to be a big argument when they fight this bill. So good. We were glad to hear that.
That's good to hear. So congratulations on your first bill.
Thank you.
Hopefully you'll get number two off the ground here pretty quick. But so during the campaign, Ms. Kerwin, her big threes were securing the Texas border, eliminate property taxes, and empowering parents. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start tackling each one of these. Securing the border. Everybody is aware of securing the border. Crime is increased across mm-hmm. Texas and across the country. Fentanyl is an epidemic at this point that's just wrecking mm-hmm. families left and right. The strain on the public education system, the strain on the healthcare infrastructure, the border crisis is terrible. What do you foresee in the upcoming 89th legislative session regarding securing the border? Is there going to be an expansion of Operation Lone Star? What are your thoughts on how that's progressing so far, Ms. Kerwin?
Well, with Governor Abbott, that being one of his big priorities, and his hands have been tied with legislation. I think hopefully one of the very first bills will be to readdress that border protection unit that was killed at the end of the last session immediately. And of course, the great news about the border is now with President Trump being elected, Governor Abbott is going to have full support and assistance. So I am looking for great things to happen very quickly. As you say, the fentanyl is terrifying. And now I have read studies that it takes very, very little of these chemicals to lace other products. So the universe of the fentanyl and the destruction it's doing to our population, especially our youth, is just expanding. And then, of course, we have all of the children that are left at the border. It's just heartbreaking. The immigrants, of course, healthcare, education that our citizens are paying for. It's outrageous. And the cartels that are being established and the terrorists. There's so many bad things that are going on. I think something is going to happen quickly. And I think that we're all going to be very, very pleasantly surprised in the outcome of our border.
I hope so. Yeah. And the speaker race, the speaker race could impact this mm-hmm. based, I mean, it did last time. So hopefully, mm-hmm. so there's any reason to reach out across other counties and districts and urge Republican chairs and Republican parties in other counties to vote for Cook. This would probably be at the top of that list.
So willing to talk to your representative. I have to do it here, but I mean that's the importance of these 26. If you know anyone. You'll be able to find online the 26 district representatives who oppose that vote to support the caucus. Again, I can't stress enough, because our state overwhelmingly voted for conservative agenda. And the main issue would be right now the border.
Absolutely. Yeah. So on to your second biggest priority here is the elimination of property taxes or property tax reform. You know, you can't talk in Johnson County, you can't talk about property taxes without highlighting Craig Hunley and his group with mm-hmm. Eliminate Property Tax. Texas Horse Barn and all the grassroots effort that he's done in raising awareness to property taxes. How big during your primary run and the general, how big of a topic, how big of a concern to the constituencies of District 58 was property taxes and the oppressiveness of how they're forcing people's out of homes?
I had no idea when I filed the planks I was going to run. It was not one of them. And after knocking on doors, I think it was in February, I would get more questions at town halls, Q&As about property taxes, what can be done, how can you help us if you're elected? And I quickly realized this has to be something that I need to take on if I'm elected. So I've focused on it all year at my events. Since I've been coming and going in Austin in the last couple of months, I have talked to a lot of representatives. I've talked to 3 senators. Everyone wants to do it. Everyone believes when you bring it up, they will go, we've got to do it. We've got to find a way. There are bills that have been filed. I think that Craig's wonderful group, and boy, we owe a lot to him for bringing this issue to the forefront for Johnson County and the state. I mean, his members, was it 10,000 now that he's got?
Oh, he's pushing 12, absolutely. Yeah, it's creeping up.
Way to go, Hundley.
That's Eliminate Property Tax, Texas Horse Barn mm-hmm. Facebook group. Join it. It's a wealth of information with a lot of resources. So,
and the things I'm learning when I read on there, I mean, it's just an endless universe. But also still talking to people. I talked to a lady who was selling, had to sell. She totaled all her taxes over all the years she'd been in her house and her note, and she actually paid more in taxes than she has on her mortgage.
I think that's the case for a lot of people that purchased their homes like in the 70s or 80s. And one of the biggest concerns that people don't realize with this is families' generational wealth. People put generational wealth into the real estate to leave it to their kids and their family members. And, their homes are paid off. Their property taxes are frozen. If they live 20 years past 65, and then they leave this nest egg to their family members, this is a catastrophic hit mm-hmm. Once this property changes hands, and a lot of people can't afford it. Have you run into that? We have big problems that I'm seeing with this.
I've run into that because they anticipate that for their children.
Anticipate passing the property down for, mm-hmm. for wealth.
And they won't be able to afford it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I'm beginning to think that it's a huge mountain to climb in Austin. And several elected officials have just, it's drastic. We got to do it. We're working on it. But we have been hearing that for many sessions. So I'm thinking, well, why can't we just open the door? Maybe a pilot program, maybe start with M&O. That's 65% of your
M&O
taxes.
Being maintenance and operations mm-hmm. of school district, that's probably the biggest single hit.
65%. Yeah. Maybe start with that. And then we can look at city, county, and school districts down the road. But I think that maybe that's a start. I am actually looking into that right now. And seeing if maybe we can get that through and if it works. Great. Let's move forward in the next session and let's try and address it on a higher level and keep going with it. Maybe just the M&O will work. I know that we had a surplus last year and they compressed it, $20 billion, which helped. But it's not eliminating it. It's kicking the can down the road. I truly want to try and eliminate it.
There's the Texas legislation session is a double-edged sword. It's mm-hmm. it's condensed over a period of 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. You can only do so much time in the time you have. There's thousands of bills that are going to come across committee desks. And the bottom line is you have to have bills ready to go. They have to be filed. The legislatures and the committees have to be aware of them. And they have to be fully on board with them early on, or you're just never going to get over that that finish line, which is a hard time at the close of legislative session. So, and sometimes it's very feasible for bills to be incrementally, you know, to be started and then expanded on later. And if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. I don't think that's anyone's mm-hmm. goal. I don't think it's anyone's desire, but we have to have realistic options.
Get it started. To that? Yeah, especially this one. Property taxes, it's such a big deal. People are afraid to take it on. So I think a pilot program or, a like I say, just M&O, or it's a good way to get it started, I think.
And it has to start somewhere. There has mm-hmm. to be some legislation passed. So, you know, as long as we're trending in the right direction, I think people need to have realistic mm-hmm. expectations of that. Mm-hmm. And then keep your eye on the big prize and keep working for it. But
and I even thought we don't even have to do it statewide. We could maybe do an urban and a rural and a diversity of districts. You know, if that would make it more acceptable for the legislators to vote on it.
It's going to be an interesting one to watch for sure. I think, you know, it is one of the most emotional topics out there. Hopefully we'll see some movement on that, some realistic reform mm-hmm. And stuff like that. It seems like every time the legislator gives some relief, there's a back end increase that we get, which we don't want to have happen. I think that's fair.
Well, then you have the argument of the appraisals, and you know, and then it just goes back and forth, and values and appraisals, and, you know, and unsuspecting citizens, which I was for many years, didn't fully comprehend it. Until I got into office, and you and Craig Hundley and Dwayne Golling and John Wood and so many wonderful citizens. Sorry, that's wonderful citizens have volunteered your time to educate the public, to go to the different chambers, to go to the different tax entities. Say, hey, look, this is what's happening. We need to try and address it.
Well, hopefully we'll see some relief in that. Yeah. So on to your last thing, and you call this empowering parents, and it basically comes down to the to the school choice issue. Mm-hmm. This is a very emotional topic for a lot of people, and there's a lot of confusion about this topic and what it is. Vouchers, ESA, you know, education savings accounts, school choice. Where do you see this going? This was one of a special session was called for this last legislative session. Where do you see this being prioritized in the 89th legislative session?
Well, I think that it's going to be a priority. I would not be surprised if it was one of the first bills. No one knows. We hear rumors it's being worked on. We hear rumors that maybe two different bills, funding, curriculum, et cetera. But no one really knows. I have always campaigned on the concept of school choice. I am a believer in families getting involved. We've got to do something. Less than 50% of our kids are on grade level. And we keep throwing money after them and throwing money after them. And here's what I've learned after studying the issue, that in the last decade, if you look at a graph, it's online, you will see that our staff has grown by 26% in our schools, and our enrollment has grown by 3%.
Yeah, and you talk about the staff. That's the senior administrative level.
Yeah.
It's like administrative bloat. It's not the front. And I think it's fair to say that I haven't ever talked to anybody about this, and I get involved with this topic a lot. I haven't talked to anybody about this that's looking to wreck public schools, or looking to hurt what happens in the classrooms, or hurting the ability for public education to educate people. Mm-hmm. There's ways that you can preserve public education, streamline it, make it better, mm-hmm. and offer some options for those that are not getting for their families out of the public education system what the individual parents feel is best for their mm-hmm. their family. Is it mm-hmm. fair to say that?
Absolutely. Very fair. And only 35 cents of every dollar ends up in the classroom. So I think it's time we do something. HB1 last year didn't pass, and probably rightly so. There were some things that definitely needed to be improved on and addressed. I am so hoping they have done that in this bill. But we've got to enable through the savings account, again, very different than the vouchers. The vouchers is yesterday. It was the original concept of school choice, but it was tuition to tuition and school to school. These savings accounts are school to family, and families can choose how they spend it. There's a list. It's you can't go out and buy a box of candy, but you can spend it on a computer, a tutor, tuition if you want, educational supplies. The money would go in the family's account, and then the families would buy whatever the educational items are, and then they would turn in the receipts, and that would be checked so that that would not be abused. That was a big issue in arguing for the savings accounts. But I think that if we can just get the door open a little bit, get some of these families involved, we need to find a new path. We need to bring up the classroom expenditures from 35 cents to at least 50 right now. And I am not an educator. I don't fully understand the financing. But I've talked to groups of educators. They want the same outcome too. I think it looks like it's so multi-layered and gotten so complicated that there are so many forces out there, it's hard to reconcile them. So I think we need to get it simplified, and I think we need to let the educators on the classroom level be involved in more decision-making on our school districts.
Well, and everybody needs to remember, there is no bill currently that's mm-hmm. in front of a committee being ready to mm-hmm. to in place in law. HB1 is dead. Mm-hmm. HB1 was an omnibus. It was a massive school funding increase and a pseudo voucher choice bill. Hopefully they will have a standalone funding bill, because there is some school funding issues potentially. And, we won't dive into that without being able to talk specifics of a bill, but, they need to make sure the allocation is going to the kids mm-hmm. and to mm-hmm. those frontline teachers, because that is where we're failing individual students. As far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. is, the administrative bloat is out of control. I'm sorry. When a school district has a social media coordinator that's getting paid exorbitant salaries to make people feel good about where they send their kids to school. Well, I would feel good about where I send my kids to school based on the amount of students that are performing at grade level. And right now it's dismal. So we need to revamp a lot of what's going on in public schools. And this is me talking here. There's some big changes that need to happen, and it needs to go to the teachers, mm-hmm. to the students, and in the classrooms mm-hmm. is where this needs to go.
To the educators. And you know what? Another thing, I think it becomes more transparent. I think I know the reps that I'm talking with in Austin, is this transparency is just a big issue on all levels of government.
Well, you cannot go a day without seeing new school officials and teachers and stuff that are coming under charges for stuff. And there's an issue with and we're getting a little bit off the empowerment of parents here, but there's some qualified immunity issues, some protectorates are in place. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is parents are trusting their most valuable resource, mm-hmm. their children, with the public education system. And we need to be able to hold them accountable mm-hmm. for when they are mistreating kids or for when they're not upholding their end of this here. There's a lot of visibility on some shortcomings in the public education system. And it's not the average teacher, and it's not the mission of the public school system, but it's some bad actors that have been allowed to mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to sit in this little entity and kind of fester for a while. And we need to get a handle on this.
Well, that's in all schools. It's public, private, charter.
Absolutely. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. But yeah. I think that, and I know as a parent, I have three daughters go through Glen Rose public schools, K through 12. Absolutely fantastic education, but that was, 30 years ago. If we could get, and I know how busy everyone is and how parenting is just, it's so much more stressful than when I was parenting, but run for school board, get involved, just knock on the door and don't take no for an answer and get your answers and give them your feedback. And I think not that you're not doing that, at all. There's some fabulous parents out there, but for to get our kids, you know, moving up the scale over 50% and support our teachers. There's so many. I spoke at the Johnson County Retired Teachers last week at their Christmas meeting. And wonderful people. And of course, they're younger than I am, but we talked a lot about when I went to school and when they were teaching. And these teachers now are so covered up with so many requirements that they cannot sit down and really, like they want to, create a classroom learning experience for these kids. So
there is a lot of redundancy and a lot of stuff that needs to be eliminated from what teachers are accountable for. Yeah. There really is. There's a lot of public education has become big business. It's become bloated, and it's become a big machine that's just it's not lean and nimble. And it needs to be lean and nimble. And, you know, and I'm gonna speak to the dads. I go to school board meetings and get involved with education across the state. And dads, we need to get off the ball fields. We need to get out of the grandstands. We need to put some of that energy into what our kids are going through in schools. We have a biblical role to play in raising our families. And we need to put some of that energy into helping facilitate the education of these children. And get as upset when things aren't going well in the school system as we would about a bad umpire call for our kids' baseball or football team. So we need to think about that, and we need to do a little soul searching. So I'm talking to the dads here, and that's just the reality of it. We need to be more involved in this. We need to partner with the education system, and we all have a role to play. Mm-hmm. In making this better, and it can be made better, and it can be done in a lot of different ways and a lot of different levels. So any last thoughts on any of your three big things, Ms. Kerwin? Securing the border, property taxes, empowering parents. Are you excited to get to work?
I'm having a ball learning about all this, and I cannot wait to hit the floor. There's some great reps down there in this freshman class. We got some real spitfires.
Oh, I'm excited.
And they are grassroots, so we're very anxious to get started.
So as we get ready to close out here, I want to remind everybody the realistic way that the legislature works. So things don't happen fast, and there's a lot of pitfalls that can happen as this process moves forward. So from conception of a bill all the way through getting signed at the governor's desk, you know, these have to get filed. They have to go in front of committee. They get heard in committee. They have to get out of committee. They have to have companion bills in the Senate or House, depending on which one you're talking about. They have to pass the floor votes, and then the governor has to get on board with this. So it's a big, long process. So we all have to have realistic expectations for how the legislative session is going to go in any bills. And we just need to understand that and make sure that we're not expecting too much out of our elected representatives as they go through this process. It's slow, but it's designed to ensure thoughtful legislation, and that's important. So we're not knee-jerk reacting and having emotional decisions that guide the legislature. But Helen, thank you so much for joining us today. And I do have to say that you and I are going to be mortal enemies here on December 29th at the University of Southern California takes on Texas A&M at the Allegiant Dome. So so I'll be cursing you under my breath a little bit in the Aggies. Well, so I wish you luck. That's a big
kick 'em.
Big thing. There you go. Fight on.
Yeah.
So so before we wrap this up, I want to remind listeners to check out A-Post Ranch and Outdoors annual Christmas feast. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, call Michelle Morales at 817-933-8168. And Ms. Kerwin, thanks for joining us.
I've loved this, and I hope you will call me throughout the session and even after. I would love to come back and update Johnson County. And also, if any of you have any ideas, I mean, this is where the bills come from, the citizens. I would be happy to talk to you. I've got a plumbing bill, and I've got a mining bill, and I've got a blood donation bill. And these are all from individual citizens that have concerns for what's happening with them. So I just bring it on. I would be delighted to discuss any issues you may have and you think that we need to address in Austin. So thank you for having me on. And Fernando, thank you for this incredible studio. This is just
we're very blessed.
Awesome.
Very blessed, yeah. So so Merry Christmas, everybody, and that's a wrap for today's show with Texas Transparency Project. Stay tuned for updates as Helen Kerwin takes office in January. And until next time, Johnson County, stay informed and stay involved.